My confession today is that I cheat on my wife. Not nearly as often as I used to, but it is true, and it's hard to admit, but I do cheat on my wife. Now, before you decide to leave our church or you call the newspaper on me, let me assure you that I am happily married, and I don't cheat on my wife in the way that you're afraid I mean. But the truth is, I still do cheat on my wife. When you think about cheating, like what it means, to cheat means to say yes to one thing, thereby saying no to something else, and whatever you're saying no to, you're cheating that thing. And we do this all the time, right? But like you could cheat your diet. You could say yes to that piece of cheesecake, thereby saying no to your diet, and by saying yes to the cheesecake, you're cheating your diet, right? Or you can do the opposite. You can say no to the Krispy Kreme donut, or maybe the fourth Krispy Kreme, and thereby say no to your appetite, to your stomach, and so you're kind of cheating your appetite, but you're saying yes to your diet, right? And so we do this all the time. We cheat. We say yes to one thing, and we say no to the other. And when we think of cheating on your spouse, what we think of is you're saying yes to another woman and thereby saying no to faithfulness with your spouse and therefore cheating on your spouse, right? And I can tell you that I've never done that. I've never even come close to doing that. In fact, I actually have this little way I've structured my life that I'm never even alone with women who aren't my spouse. So I don't even have the opportunity to do that. But I do cheat on my spouse. You know how I do it? With my schedule. I don't know if you ever thought about this, but we all cheat people when it comes to our schedule, when it comes to what is probably the most precious commodity that we have, which is our time, right? If you're anything like me, your schedule is crazy, right? And there's just like all these things to do. There's your job and your family and there's hobbies and there's friends and there's, you know, TV. There's just a million things that we want to spend time on and that people are trying to convince us we should spend time on. And there's just not enough time to go around, right? You can't give everything the time that it wants or it deserves or that you'd like to give it. And so we have no choice but to cheat. We have to not give time to some things that want our time. We have to cheat on those things. And we do this in all kinds of ways. Maybe there might be some people who cheat God, like their relationship with God, the time they should spend with God, because they're spending so much time in the gym. There might be teenagers who cheat their homework because they spend so much time on video games. Right? There might be wives who kind of cheat their husbands because they are so focused on their kids, which is a good thing, but so focused that they don't give their husbands the attention that they really do need, and so they're cheating their husband. But I would say probably for most people, not everybody, but for a lot of people, the area where this comes into play most commonly might be the tension between our jobs and our family. Because if you have a job and if you have a family, those tend to be the two things that need the most time from us, right? And I do realize that some of you right now, maybe you don't have a family, maybe you're single, or maybe some of you right now don't have a job, and so that's not a concern. But if you have both of those, if you have family and job, and those are two things that need tons of time, and what typically happens is you have to cheat one or you have to cheat the other. And today, you might be able to apply the message and what we're going to talk about in a lot of different ways, but I'm going to focus a lot of my time on this tension between our jobs and our families. I can tell you for me, I love my family. I did really well when I chose who to marry. Like, I did a really good job, and I have a great wife. I also have two awesome kids, and I love spending time with my family. Love it. I also love my job. Like, there's some things I don't like to do, but for the most part, I love what I get to do. In fact, most of what I do doesn't even feel like work. Like, it's fun for me, and I would just keep doing it and doing it if I could. And a lot of you, maybe you can relate. You might say, yeah, I love what I do, and I keep doing it. Some of you would say, no, I don't love what I do, but I do have to do lots of it, but not because I want to. It's because the boss makes me, you know, and so I do have to give it a lot of time, but not because I want to. It's because I have to. And if you're like me, like, I always have more to do, like, work-wise. I've been doing this for 16 years or something like that, and I have literally never had a moment where I went, oh, it's all done. Like there's nothing I have to do. There's always something I have to do. There's always more emails to reply to, phone calls to make, people to meet with, things to write, things to work on, projects. There's always more to do. And that means that there's never a time where I can go, oh, good, work's over here. And what that means is I'm going to cheat. There's just not enough time to get all the work done. And my family needs time as well. And so the reality is I'm going to cheat one or the other. And that's why the question tonight is not, am I cheating? I'm cheating. And for you, the question is not, are you cheating? You're cheating. When it comes to your schedule, with your time, there's just way too much to do than you have time to do. And so the question is not, are you cheating? Am I cheating? The question is, where are we cheating? What are we cheating? You know, for most of us, what I've found with lots of people, especially when it comes to this whole work and family thing, is that what we do is we tend to kind of turn our attention to whatever's screaming the loudest. You know, we kind of go through life like from disaster to disaster. It's like, work needs me. My family needs me. You know, and so we just kind of run from disaster to disaster. And that's just not a very healthy way to live. It also creates this problem. And this happens where a lot of people teach their families that the only way you can really have my attention is if you create a crisis. And there are a lot of kids who are like, okay, I'll create a crisis if that's the way I get attention from you. And so a lot of us just run from crisis to crisis. And it is interesting to me how much time we will give to our families when there is a real crisis. There are a lot of people who you talk to them and like, oh man, my job is overwhelming. And you say, well, have you been on a vacation? I could not do a vacation. I mean, if I wasn't at work, the whole thing would go down. You know, it couldn't happen. Or my boss would never get me. They can't get away from work. But when a crisis happens, they will do things that they previously considered impossible. You know, they're taking time off. They're shutting the business down because my family needs me. This is a crisis. And so I guess what I'm saying tonight is, why let a crisis dictate where we spend our time? Why not instead choose to, in the words of this guy, he's an author, pastor named Andy Stanley, and I'm borrowing, kind of stealing a few of his ideas tonight. He's got some good stuff on this. But why not instead cheat by design? Why not cheat by design? Why not choose to live our lives and to kind of appropriate our time to the things that matter most to us? Why not live out our priorities? Why not cheat by design? Realizing we're going to cheat. There's just not enough time to go around. And so let's choose to give our time to the things that matter most to us. I realize that some of you are probably like, that sounds great. It sounds awesome. I just can't do that. Like there's just no way. I mean, I would love to, you know, I'd love to figure out my priorities, and I'd love to kind of give the right amount of time to the top ones and not cheat what's most important with things that are less. I would love to do that. It's just impossible. I could never do that. I could not get myself to that situation. And I understand. I understand what you're thinking. But maybe there's one aspect you haven't worked into this equation, and it's God. Like one thing you may not realize is that there is a very real God who is for you. Like, he is not against you, he is for you. And he is, like, alive, and he's well, and he's active in people's lives. And he wants to be in your life because he loves you, and he wants you to help you live the life that you want to live and that he knows that you are capable of living. And so maybe you could get to this place where you actually cheat by design, where you live your life according to your values, your priorities, and maybe God could help you to do that. Do you know, the Bible's, you know, a book that's filled with people's stories, and just about every single person, their story, they cheat. Some people cheat in good ways, some people cheat in bad ways. We all cheat. And so there's all kinds of examples of people who cheated. And what I want to do tonight is I want to show you one of them. I want to show you an example of a guy who cheated because I think there's a ton that we can learn from his example. And you're going to be like, you know, this guy lived a long time ago. What does he have to do with me? He has everything to do with like our situations. So this guy's name is Daniel. Some of you grew up in church and were like, yeah, I heard about this guy. He's lions or something. But his name was Daniel. And if you're trying to place the story, it happened about 2,600 years ago. Okay? And what happened was the ruling empire in the world at this point is the Babylonians. And the Babylonians decided, in their kind of, you know, quest to rule the world, they decide to take over the nation of Israel. And so they invade the city of Jerusalem. And what they decide is, instead of wiping out Israel and just, you know, just killing them off, they decide, let's steal their identity. Like, let's take away their identity and their culture and just make them our slaves. Like, that's better. Instead of killing people, we can have a whole nation of slaves. And so they decide to do this. We're just going to make them Babylonian slaves and make them kind of forget who they are. Well, part of their strategy to do this is they decide to look for the best and the brightest young leaders of the nation of Israel in the city of Jerusalem, and to take these best and brightest young men and kind of have them move into Babylon, into the palace, the king's palace in Babylon, and just indoctrinate them with Babylonia, with Babylon culture. So they're going to teach them the language. They're going to, you know, teach them the stories and the history of Babylon so that they'll just become devoted to Babylon instead of to Israel, thinking, man, if we can get their young leaders, they're going to influence other people and we'll have the whole nation. And so they invade the city and they take this guy named Daniel, who's one of the best and the brightest. And so they take him out of his city. They move him to Babylon. They put him in the king's palace. They change his name. They're like, your name ain't Daniel anymore. They give him a new name. They change his language. They're like, you have to learn our language and speak our language. They start teaching him their history and their values. And Daniel doesn't want any of that. But he tolerates it. He's like, you know what? There's nothing I can do. And so he kind of compromises with all that, even though he doesn't want it. But then something happens that Daniel will not tolerate. That he just puts his foot down and he's like, okay, nope, too far. And I want to show you what it is. So we're going to put some Bible verses on the screen. If you have a Bible with you tonight, you can open the book of Daniel. And you might be like, I got a Bible, but I don't know where the book of Daniel is. There's a table of contents in every Bible, so that will show you where Daniel is. If you don't own a Bible, we give them out for free. And so if you stop by the Velcro bar in the back, the Velcro bar is kind of our connecting place. So if you're leaving here tonight going, man, I got some questions, it's a place to go. If you leave here going, I want to talk to you about what I heard tonight, place to go. If you leave here saying any directions to a good restaurant, place to go. I think, I don't know. But we'll give you Bibles back there for free. There's no catch, no cost. So Daniel chapter 1. We're going to start in verse 3. And this is what happened. So you're going to be like, well, this is what he just said. Exactly. This is what I just said. So starting in verse 3. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, maybe? I don't know. Chief of his court officials to bring in some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility. So here's the deal where they're taking the best and the brightest. Young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. Pause there, and I'll just tell you, ironically, when people ask me to describe myself, this is exactly what I say. So, just weird. It's just weird. So then it says, and here's the deal. Here's where Daniel gets this problem. Verse 5, if you're in your Bible. It says, the king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. This is Daniel's problem. He compromised all the way up to here. He's like, you know what? I'll tolerate this. I don't like it, but I'll do it. Until this moment. His problem is the food and the wine. And here's why. Back then, what would happen is the Babylonians didn't believe in the God that Daniel believed in, and the God that, you know, we talk about here. They believed in all kinds of gods. There were, you know, they're, you know, the sun god and the cloud god and the river god and the frog god and all that kind of stuff. And so what they would do is, as part of their worship, is that they would offer food and wine to the gods, and the gods don't actually eat and drink the food and wine, so they would offer it as a sacrifice as part of like a religious ceremony, and then they would eat the food and wine as part of that ceremony. And by eating the food and wine, it was, you know, kind of like acknowledging, you know, this is from our God and it's his provision and we're worshiping him by partaking of this food and drink. And so Daniel is like, I can't go there. You can change my name. You can change my clothes. You can tell me I have to speak a different language, but I'm not going to worship your God. And if I eat that food and I drink that wine, I would feel like I'm partaking in your religion. And I can't do that. I can't do that. And what's ironic, I think, if you think about the situation, is I think Daniel had every reason to do it. Like, why stay loyal to a God who seems to be doing nothing for you? Right? If you're Daniel and your situation is that you've been worshiping God your whole life, living in Jerusalem as a part of Israel, God's people, and then all of a sudden Babylon's armies come marching in and they take you hostage and they bring you to a different country and they change your name, and the whole time you're praying, God, don't let this happen. God, where are you? And God doesn't respond. Daniel's got to feel like, man, I'm tempted to lose my faith right now, not to stay loyal to God. And not only is God not seeming to come through for him, the king is. The king said, hey, you can stay in my palace. I'm not putting you in the Super 8. You know, you can stay in my palace. You can have my wardrobe. You know, have some nice clothes, and we're going to take care of you. Have food and wine from my table. It's the best there is. Like, the king gets the best stuff, and I'm going to share it with you. And so there has to be this real temptation. Change your loyalty, man. Forget God. The king. The king's the one coming through for you. But Daniel says, no, I'm not going to do that. Now, I think, and again, you might go, man, this is like 2,600 years ago and like the other side of the world. What's this have to do with me? I think that Daniel's situation very much parallels ours. If you think about Daniel's situation, it's like, man, he is forced in a situation where he has to cheat, right? He's either going to stay loyal to the heavenly king or to this earthly king, right? Who is he going to be loyal to? And whoever he's loyal to, he's saying no to the other. He's saying yes to one, no to the other. When he says yes to one, he's cheating the other, right? And so it's very similar to our situations. You know, we have these things in life where we say, you know what, I have to choose. And a lot of time, it's a time issue, but where am I going to put my time? Where am I going to put my loyalty? Is it going to be with this or with that? When I say yes to one, I say no to the other, and I'm cheating the other. So our situation's a lot like Daniel's situation. And here's what's interesting. When you read the story, if you're like me, it's so obvious what Daniel should do, right? It's like, well, come on. I mean, yeah, he's the king, but it's God. Of course you choose God over the king. This is simple. It's black and white, right? But what's interesting is that when it's our situation, it never seems that black and white, right? Other people look at our situation and they're like, well, it's obvious what you should do, but we're like, oh, you don't understand. And what we do is we make excuses, right? When we're put in these situations, we're like, it's not so black and white for me, though, because you don't understand my situation. You don't know my boss. You don't know what it's like for me. And what we do is we make excuses. Daniel could have made excuses. Right? Daniel could have said, it's not that black and white for me. God hasn't been coming through for me. The king's coming through for me. If I say no to the king, like if I disobey his orders to eat his food and drink his wine, you know what happens? I get executed. That's the penalty, right? That's a good excuse, right? Well, am I really going to die over this? He has all kinds of opportunities to make excuses, but he doesn't. What he does instead is he considers this to be a test of his loyalty. He's like, this is a test of my loyalty. Like, this is my moment where I get to decide who am I truly loyal to. Like, I've compromised a lot, but is my loyalty with this king? His name is Nebuchadnezzar, with the king? Or is it with my heavenly king, with God? Here's the deal with us. When we face the same situation, when we have to choose, it's a test of our loyalties. What we typically do is make excuses, but it's not. It's a test of our loyalties. So like this situation we're talking about today. So, you have this job that wants your time. You have this family that wants your time. And you have to figure out, who am I going to cheat? And if I asked you, those of you, and I realize it's not everybody, and you can apply it in the way you need to apply it, but if you have a job and you have a family, if I was to ask you, hey, how loyal are you to your family? How loyal are you to your wife or to your kids, your husband, whatever? You would answer, I'm sure, in extreme terms, right? You would go, oh, I mean, I'm completely loyal to my family. And if I said, well, give me some evidence, that, like, how do you know that? How could I see that? You would answer in terms, I bet you would not talk about how much time you give them. Instead, what you would talk about is how you feel. You would say, oh, I mean, I love my family. You would say, I would do anything for them. I would do anything to protect them, to provide for them. You would talk all about how you feel, right? But here's the deal. If I asked your family, how loyal is he to you? How loyal is she to you? They would not answer in terms of how you feel. They wouldn't. What they would answer is in terms of your time. Guarantee. They would say, He'd say he's loyal to us and we're high value for him, but he's always at work. He didn't come home till, we don't see him at dinner. He didn't come home till I don't know what time. And works weekends. We don't do family vacation. Yeah, he would say, but no. Or they would say, yeah, he's here for dinner. He's here on Saturdays. And it would be all about time. That's how they would judge your loyalty. Here's the problem. If I were to ask your work, your employer, hey, how loyal are you to the company? They would answer by the same measuring stick, time. They would talk about how much time you put into the job, right? And so the problem is they both want time. And so we have to cheat. We have no choice but to cheat, right? And so what I'm suggesting tonight is that you choose to cheat by design, that you choose what is most important to me, and that you will not, from this moment on, even if you have in the past, that you are not going to cheat things that are more important with things that are less important. And you might say, man, that sounds good, but I wouldn't know how to go about that. That's the beauty of Daniel's story. I want to look a little bit more at Daniel's story because Daniel provides this amazing example of how to cheat by design and how to go about this. And so let's look again at his story and just see what happens next. So here's the deal. So with Daniel, it begins with a decision. We're going to put verse 8 on the screen. It says, but Daniel resolved. It is a decision. He resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine. And he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. So Daniel made this decision. You know what? I am going to honor God. I'm not going to honor this king. In this situation, I'm done compromising. This is where I draw the line. I am going to honor God. And the cool thing is he made the decision before he knew what the outcome would be. You know, when he makes this decision, he's probably thinking, it's probably the end of my life. I'm not going to eat the food. I'm not going to drink the wine, and I'll probably die, but I am going to honor God. So it begins with making a decision, but it doesn't end there. For a lot of people, it'd be like, yeah, I'm going to make a decision too. This is my decision, and then it ends there. But what he does is he next comes up with a plan. So look, we're going to look back at verse 8 again, but then we're going to continue to verse 9. It says, but Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. Now God had caused the official to show favor and sympathy to Daniel. Do you notice how that second verse, the verse 9 begins? It begins, now God. It is a great way to begin a sentence. We've talked about this before. There are a variety of verses in the Bible that begin, but God, or begin, now God. And those are some of the best verses in the Bible. And when that verse happens in your life, it's one of the best things that can happen to you. Because it's like you're in this situation and you feel stuck and there's no way out. You're at the bottom of depression and you don't know how you could ever experience joy again. Your relationship is a disaster and it seems like there's no hope. And so you're kind of losing, you're losing hope. But God, now God, it's like God enters your situation because God is for you. He's not against you. He loves you. He wants to come into your life and help you to live the life that you need to live. And so when we honor him, what he does is he comes into our life and he helps us to live the life we want. Now God, it's a great thing. And so we see God start to come through for Daniel in this situation. He makes his decision, and then he comes up with a plan. But he doesn't stop there. Now he has to deliver the plan. And so look at verse 10. It says, but the official told Daniel, I'm afraid of my lord the king who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would then have my head because of you. He's like, listen, if I let you not eat the food and the wine from his table and you start to get skinny and you start to get weak and he sees that there's something wrong with you and he's like, what's up with this guy? And I go, well, he hasn't been eating the food and the wine from your table. Then he's going to kill me because I bent the rules for you. But look how Daniel responds. He's so clever. Verse 11. It says, Daniel then said to the guard, whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, maybe. He says, please, test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food and treat your servants in accordance with what you see. So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. And this is what's so brilliant about Daniel's plan. It's that he wasn't insensitive to the predicament of his boss, his supervisor. He approached the situation diplomatically. And like I said, I think there's a ton that we can learn from Daniel's example. And so if you decide to do this tonight, and I hope you will, I hope that you'll follow Daniel's example. And I want to give you three words so that when you leave here and you're like, man, what is it I need to do? You can be like, okay, I got those three words, and it kind of gives me kind of an outline to act on. So if you're taking notes, write this down. If you're not, take mental notes. Can you like burn this into your brains like this? Got it? Can you do that? You don't look like you can do that, so forget that. So here's the three words. The three words are decide, develop, deliver, okay? What I'm hoping that you will do tonight is you're going to decide, and then you're going to leave here, you're going to develop, and then you're going to deliver. So let me walk you through that. Decide. What Daniel did is he started with a decision, right? It says Daniel resolved, and it has to start with you with a decision. The decision process, I think it starts by asking this question. What are my values? What are my priorities? It may be a question you've never asked. Maybe you're just kind of coasting through life. What is important to me? Okay? Because if you don't know what's important to you, you can't decide to live by your values. If you don't know what they are, you can't decide, I'm going to live by my priorities if I don't know what my priorities are. And so what is important to you? Like, is God number one for you? May not be. But is he? And if he is, okay, well then, you should live that way, right? God should be number one. And is your family more important than your job? If so, well, then you need to live your life that way. It makes sense, right? What is important to you? And so you kind of ask that question, and then you decide, I am going to live by my values. I am going to cheat by design. I don't have enough time to give everything the time it wants, so I'm going to give the right amount of time to the things that matter most. You have to begin with a decision. Some of you know this and some of you have not yet figured this out, but here's the deal, okay? And this is good. Like this is a good thing to know if you don't know it. No one, and when I say no one, what I actually mean is no one ever wanders into the life that they want to live. Never happens. There's never been a person who's just kind of walking through life, and I'm going to do this, and what about some of this, and look, here I am. This is the life I've always dreamed of living. It's never happened. It's never happened. Like the people that you look at in life, and you're like, they got their act together. Like that's I admire that person. They're living that's the kind of life I would want to live. You ask them, they will not say, yeah, it just kind of happened. I don't know what happened. Just kind of, whoa, I'm here. Did not happen that way. What happened is they made decisions. They decided their way into the life that they wanted to live. That's how everyone does it. You make decisions. You make commitments, and those commitments lead you to the life you want. And so it has to begin with a decision. Now, the decision phase is where you start to feel some fears coming up, and you're like, I don't know, can I really do this? And what is this going to look like? But you know what? You stare that fear in the face, and you say, I'm staring fear down because I have to make this decision because I want to live the life I want to live. All right? So it starts with a decision. And then we have to develop a plan, okay? Develop a plan. And here, I think we begin with this question. What are my non-negotiables? What are my non-negotiables? Like for Daniel. Daniel didn't have everything perfect, okay? And it's not like, man, Daniel did it so everything was exactly the way he wanted it to be. It wasn't the way he wanted it. He didn't want to live in Babylon, but he did. He didn't want to have a new name, but he did. He didn't want to wear their clothes instead of, but he did. But he would not eat their food and drink their wine. That was the non-negotiable. He said, I'll compromise. I'll do some things I don't want to do, but there's one thing I will not do. I will not. Okay? And so you need to decide, what are my non-negotiables? Like, what in life am I just like, you know what, that's just too important. I will not bend there. I'm not going to compromise on that. Like that's something that's critical to me. If I'm going to live by my values, whatever they are, if God's first, well, then there's got to be some non-negotiables that this is something, some things I'm going to do no matter what else happens, non-negotiable. If my family's more important than my job, here are some things, non-negotiable, right? Whatever it is for you. I'll give you an example. Like for me, I have a few non-negotiables because I have to compromise a lot. I don't get to do everything I want to do and live the way I want and give the exact amount of time, but there's a few things I've said I'm not bending. So like I do very few night meetings. Most pastors are at their church building 5-6 nights a week. It's just like, that's the pastor's life. And I'm like, that's not the life I'm going to live. I'm not. I'm here on Monday nights, Maybe I'll do another night in the week, maybe, but I'm not going to do a lot of meetings at night. And I've also said I'm not going to work on Fridays. I work on Sunday all day, and so Friday's my day off. I spend the first part of it with my wife and the second half with my kids and my wife. And I try not to work a whole lot on Saturdays, but like Friday, I'm not going to work. It's non-negotiable. And the reason is I know a bunch of adults who grew up as kids in pastors' houses. And what happened was they had this dad who, because he was so focused in doing the Lord's work, he completely neglected his family. And so these kids have grown up resenting not only their dad, but God. Because, like, God took my dad away. I didn't really have a dad because he was too busy at church. He was there every night. We didn't see him. And I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that to my kids. And if I do that to my kids, I didn't gain anything. I lost, right? And so I have some non-negotiables. What are your non-negotiables? You know, as you develop your plan, that's what you need to think is, like, what are the things that, like, not bending on, okay? Because that's, like, those are the cornerstones of your plan, all right? And then the third thing you have to do is you have to deliver your plan. And the question you ask here is, what's the best way for me to get from here to there? Okay, like, here's the life I'm living now. And, you know, and I'm recognizing it's a little out of whack. I don't give time to some things that are really important to me, and I give tons of time to some things that aren't, and so things aren't right here, and here's where I want to be. Like, I can see it. You know, I can see this life I want to live. I can see the non-negotiables that can keep me, you know, living out my priorities, living by my values. How do I get from here to there? And you kind of work that out. If the thing that you're going to struggle with, and you might have something different, but if the thing you struggle with is the work family kind of tension, it may involve you having a tough conversation with your boss. That might be part of how you get from here to there. And so let me just say a couple quick things about cheating your work and this conversation. Now, when you go in to have that conversation, let's say you decide and you go, you know what, there's a couple new non-negotiables. I am not going to be at work till whatever o'clock at night every night anymore. Like, I can't do that to my family. Or I'm not going to work on Saturdays. You know, I work plenty of money through Saturday non-negotiable, whatever it is for you. And you go in to your boss to talk about it. Here's the deal. The goal of that conversation is not for you to make your point. Okay? The goal of that conversation is for you to have a more flexible, manageable schedule that will allow you to live by your priorities, right? It's not to make your point. So don't come in here next week and say, hey, Vince, you were right, man. I went in this week, and I got in my boss's face, and I told him like it was. Like, I told him, I'm not doing this anymore, and you can't make me do that anymore. And he fired me, Vince. He fired me. I mean, like, yeah, I would fire you too. You know, the point isn't to make your point. The point is to get the life you want to live. This, by the way, is the genius of Daniel. The genius of Daniel. When you look at how Daniel went about this, Daniel was able to do something that is brilliant and rare, but we want to be those rare people who do this. What Daniel did was he was able to be dogmatic and diplomatic. He was dogmatic and diplomatic, and that's genius. What I mean is dogmatic, non-negotiables, right? He's like, I'm not going to bend. I'm not changing. Like, I'm doing this. Diplomatic, he went about it in a really delicate, smart way. Did you notice when he talked to his boss, the first word he said? Please, right? He didn't say, hey, I'm not eating the food. I'm not drinking the water. And start throwing. He said, please. You know, and so he's very diplomatic. And then what does he do? He addresses the issue directly. He didn't kind of skirt around the issue. He asked. He didn't demand. He didn't demand his rights. He said, would you be willing, perhaps, to let me not drink the food and drink the food? Yes, I will let you do that. Eat the food and drink the wine. And he offered alternatives. He said, what about this? Instead of just saying, I won't drink, I won't eat it. What if we had vegetables? Like, there's got to be some other things to eat, right? Like, there's got to be some other alternatives. And then he proposed a test. He didn't say, I'm not doing it. He said, how about 10 days? Like, what if we came up with another idea that might work and we tried it for 10 days? Like, how's that going to hurt anybody? If it doesn't work, we can talk again. But if it works, then we're good, right? So 10 days, he was dogmatic. He went in there, I'm not going to do it. But he was diplomatic in how he went about it. And I would encourage you, if you have to have this conversation with your boss or whatever you need to do, dogmatic and diplomatic. Genius. And we need to do that. We need to do that too. The other thing, let me just say, When I say cheating your work, and man, you know, if this is your issue and you're not spending enough time with your family and you realize I need to start cheating my work instead of cheating my family because my family is more important to me than my work. When I say cheating your work, I do not mean cheating your employer. There's a difference. Like if you come in next week and go, hey, Vince, I did it. You were right. Like, I was giving way too much time to work and not enough time to my family. So what I'm doing now is my boss doesn't know if I leave 20 minutes early. He doesn't even check. And so I just leave a little bit early every day. And he's still paying me for that time. But he didn't even know I'm with my family. So that is not what I'm saying. Okay? That's a lack of integrity. I think one of the reasons there's that now God part in Daniel's story is because Daniel is honoring God. And God's like, okay, I'll honor you. Like, that's you're not going to honor me. I'm going to make sure I honor you. And if we cheat our employer in that way, that's not honoring God, right? And I don't think we're going to have now God. He's not going to come into our situation and help. I don't think. And so it's not cheating your employer. It's cheating work, right? It's trying to figure out how can I make sure that I spend more time on my most important values and priorities. And there's a lot we can learn from Daniel. We can learn to make a decision. It has to start with a decision. And that we need to develop a plan with some non-negotiables. And then we need to deliver that plan. And we need to do it in a way that is dogmatic, but in a diplomatic approach. Genius. A lot we can learn from this dude, even though he lived like 2,600 years ago. And I hope you learn that, and I hope you take it home. Because here's why. Here's why this all is important, and it's important for us to talk about. And again, if you're like, man, I don't even have a job right now, or I'm not married right now, I have kids right now, there's still things that you're thinking. I know where this applies. I had somebody email me last night and said, my wife and I were sitting, and our daughter was playing on the floor, and I was texting somebody on my phone, and he was on the computer, and one of them said to the other one, we cheat our daughter with electronics. And so I don't know what it is for you, but you can figure it out. But here's why it's so important. Because of this. This is going to sound weird, but I am not a prophet. Okay? I'm a prophet. But I know something about you, and I know it with like crystal clarity, and I know it with certainty. Okay? Do you want to know something about yourself? Here it is. In the future, you are going to die. Look at that. Pretty good, right? But here's something else I know about you. Okay, this is a little bit better. When you're facing death, like when you're staring at death, when you're on your deathbed or maybe literally, maybe metaphorically, but you realize, I'm done. And I've been in hospital rooms with people who are done, who realize, I got hours or days left. I've talked to those people, okay? When you're in that position, and you will be someday, I think I can promise you that you will not say, I just wish I had spent more time in the office. You're not going to say that. You're also not going to say, if only I had watched more TV. Why? You're also not going to say, you know what? If I could go back and if I could do it all again, more video games. I wish I had spent more time on video. It's not going to happen, right? Here's what you might say. You might get to the end of your life and be sitting in that room and somebody like me is with you or a friend, and you might say, I wish I had focused more on my relationship with God, you know? And there's this God who is like real and he loved me like no one else did, and he offered relationship to me. And I didn't give him any time. Not really. You might say that. You might say, you know, if I could go back and do it all again, I wish I had spent more time with my family. I mean, I missed my kids growing up because I was at work so much. If I could go back, man, I'd do anything to get more time with my family. You might say that. You might say that. And so I hope that tonight is not just a night where you showed up at church. It was kind of good. I hope tonight is a night where you make a decision. I am going to cheat by design. I'm gonna live by my values and priorities. And I'm no longer going to cheat things that are more important with things that are less important. All right? So here's what we're doing. We did this last week. We're doing this week. And we're not going to do it again. So this is your last chance. But Tommy said earlier that this is not about I'm confessing, confessions of a pastor, but it's about all of us, right? It's about all of us together. And so hopefully you're resonating with my confessions. And even if you're not, we want to give you a chance to confess. It is a powerful thing to confess. You may never have done this before, but when you let God know that you know where you've blown it and you know that you need help, it's a powerful thing. And in fact, the Bible says that when we confess, God forgives. That's good. That's powerful. It also says that confession is the path to healing and wholeness and freedom. That's really good. And so we're encouraging you in this series, why don't you do some confessing? And so tonight, I want to encourage you that we're going to have a little bit of music, and I want to encourage you to take that time to maybe talk to God and to confess. I don't know what your confession is. Your confession might be, you might go, no, it's you said it. I've given way too much time to work and not enough to my family. It might be something different. You might say, no, when you say I cheat on my spouse, I've cheated on my spouse. Like the way you think it means. Or I am cheating on my spouse. And the first step out of that would be to confess. At least to confess it to God. It might be something different. You might say, no, I'm the person who I'll spend an hour in the gym every day, but I can't give God 5 minutes to pray. I need to confess that. Whatever it is. Here's what I want to encourage you to do. We gave you a piece of paper on the way in, and I want to encourage you to actually write down your confession. You don't have to, and God doesn't only, acknowledge if you write it down or anything like that, but there's something powerful about actually writing it down and seeing it. It's not just this, vague, hazy idea in your head, but it's something you can look at and go, wow, that's real. And so I want to encourage you to write down, God, I am sorry, but I've... God, please forgive me because I've... God, I am struggling with... Okay? Just whatever you're wording, but I would encourage you to do that. You don't have to, but I would encourage you. I think it would be a powerful moment for you. And if you write that down, you can do this. Nobody else has to see it. It can just be you, right? You can kind of hide that, and you can fold it in half. And if you'd like to, and I think this would be kind of cool for you as well, we created this confession booth over here. You can take that confession that you've written and just put it into the confession booth. And the idea is you don't hold on to the things that you confess. They're gone. You give them to God. And so the idea is you put it in there, you can just symbolically picture and think, man, I'm giving this to God and it's gone. He forgives me when I do this. Okay, so we're going to give you some time to do that. The band's going to come up. They're going to play one last song. And during this time, we also make communion available. Communion is all around the confession booth. And communion is a piece of bread and it's a cup of juice that represent Jesus' body and blood. And it couldn't be any more appropriate than tonight, because it's all about the sins that we are confessing. What the Bible teaches us is that God is willing to forgive our sin, but that there is a penalty, for lack of a better word, for sin, and somebody has to pay it. And so when God forgives us, somebody still has to pay the penalty for what we've done, and that's exactly what Jesus did on the cross. And so when we take communion, we're acknowledging that Jesus died for my sins. He died to forgive me those things that I'm confessing to him tonight. And so communion is a way of remembering that, thanking God for that, recommitting ourselves to live with Jesus in our life. And so if you'd like to take communion, you can take the bread and juice, bring them back to your seat, and when you're ready and you've prayed, you can eat and drink. All right, so I'm going to pray, band will play, and then we'll close out the service. Let's pray. God, as we've talked about tonight, the reality is we all cheat. And there's no question of are we. The question is where are we cheating? We don't have the time to give to everything we want to give our time to, and so we all cheat. And God, I'm so thankful that we can turn our lives around because of you, that there's this now God idea that because we're here tonight, we could walk away and have a different life. We could start moving towards a life that we want to live and know we should live and living by our priorities and our values because of a decision we make tonight and your help as we move forward. And so I pray, God, that that happens tonight, that we'd be a different people in the future because of what we learn and experience here. God, the other reality is we all sin. Nobody likes the idea, but we all sin. We've all done things we know are wrong. We know. And God, I just thank you for this, for the act of confession, that it's a way to get it out and to get it forgiven. And God, thank you for Jesus, that he came and gave his life so that we could have life. And we thank you for that. We thank you for communion as a reminder of that, God. And we thank you that even when we look at our lives and it seems like we've messed up so bad and it's such a mess and things, you know, couldn't possibly get better, that's not true, because now, God, and that you can take our mess and you can make it okay. So, God, we come to you now asking for that. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.